Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hello guys, and welcome to this episode of Heavy Metal Tones. I'm your podcast host, Tony Evans. I hope you're having a good day out there in the world. Right now, when I'm recording this, it's my birthday. Hooray! Cake and presents and so on. Been a nice day, been a great day. I managed to pick myself up a copy of Jethro Tull's album Stormwatch, an Australian print. Just without mooching around on my birthday, as you do. Picked one up, I'm pretty happy with that. I have the reissue, but I don't have the original one. Not on vinyl, anyway. Enough of that. Careers is stuff. Today's episode is about the new Judas Priest album. The new Judas Priest album, okay? So we did the big Bruce Dickinson one last week. Now it's the big Priest album this week. And where would we be without Priest, eh? It's a good day in the world with a new Priest album. Even the worst Priest album is a good Priest album, right? No Priest album is a sad day. And it doesn't matter whether you like the classic, KK Downing and Glenn Tipton lineup. It really doesn't matter, because you're going to get what you get from Judas Priest is you get quality. From the moment you press play to the moment the last note fades away, you get absolute 110% balls to the wall metal quality. There's no lightheartedness here, there's no half measures. They do it with full force. They always have done. And the two guitarists that now play for them, i.e. Richie Faulkner, and I have interviewed him for his solo band, and the wonderful Andy Sneap, certainly don't let us down in any way whatsoever. And what's amazing about this album is that Glenn Tipton, who has been sick for a very long time now, poor bugger, is the reason why he doesn't tour anymore. It actually plays on two tracks on this album. And this is the deluxe edition that you can get on all streaming platforms. It has the highs and has even highers, if you can take it, if you understand what I'm saying, right? Now, 50 years, it's been 50 plus years that Priest has been plying its wares in one form or another across the globe, spreading its metal madness to all of us, okay? And of course, the main firing piston behind that is Rob Halford, in all the guises that you get, the long-haired Led Zeppelin-esque vocals to the S&M leather and whip stage to the long black coat and the Nostradamus moment. It's all fantastic. Not one moment does he ever not give 110%. Even with albums like Nostradamus, which I have reviewed here, I really liked it. I really, really like that album. I know people don't, and I got some interesting feedback from that, from people, particularly people I know quite well. Now I saw them on that tour, as I've mentioned on the show before, and they were absolutely fantastic. And honestly, as I said, whatever Halford and, you know, the guys put their name on is always a badge of quality. It's like, you know, if you're buying a really, like Apple, you buy an Apple computer, you know what you get from it. You buy Bosch power tools or whatever, you know what you're getting from it, right? Like stereos with Marantz or Sony, you know the quality of the build is going to be good and the history of the product is going to be good. And this is the same with this, okay? It does lead on right. I mean, it's a great addition to 2018's firepower, because it sort of sounds like it's out of that gate. It doesn't, whereas firepower was very traditional and very very old school in a lot of ways. This new album is a little more progressive, although, as Richie Faulkner said, it's not to worry too much, guys. It's not Nostradamus again. It's just a little bit more than chorus, verse, chorus, solo, chorus, verse, chorus. You know, it's got longer bits, shorter bits, faster bits, heavier bits. It sort of does change a little bit of its style throughout the album. It's not as frenetic at every single moment that Firepower was, which gave you, that's what was such a thrilling album about. It was so, so outrageously fast and fun. And that's not to say this one isn't, because this one is amazing. It's quite a long album if you think about it. Like, I'll give you the rundown of the tracks, right? Because for me, this is very much like, it does jump out like the Painkiller. It has a very much Painkiller vibe, a mix of Painkiller and Resurrection. Like, it really does sort of mix in. So you've got Panic Attack, which is one of the singles, The Serpent and the King, Invincible Shield, another single, name of the album, Devil in Disguise, Gates of Hell, Crown of Thorns, Trial by Fire, Escape from Reality, Son of Thunder, Giants in the Sky, and then with the deluxe bit has Fight for Life, Vicious Circle, sorry, and The Lodger. Now, it's 1 hour and 3 minutes long, and it's their 19th studio album. For a band that's been around for 50 years, 19 studio albums is not as huge as you think, is it? I mean, they've had some big sort of hiatuses in between when Rob left and so on. And but it just shows you that what they do bring out is, they think about it, it's considered, right? Yes, not every album is going to be British Steel. Yes, not every album is going to be Painkiller or Stained Class or Screaming for Vengeance or Turbo Lover. It's not all going to be those kind of albums, right? The band has to grow, and so does the sound of the music that they produce. I mean, if anything, Rob has got more and more, I don't know how he does it. I mean, he's getting on in life, is that Robbie? And yeah, his voice is wonderful. It doesn't break live. It doesn't sound engineered in the recording. It's certainly a miracle of nature that himself, a bit unlike Bruce. Bruce's voice, Bruce Dickens knows, quite get those notes anymore, whereas Halford, for some reason, is just always there. It's an absolute miracle of nature. And his ability to keep him, you know, look, not take himself too seriously, and to love everything there is to do with the heavy metal community. Everything that comes out of his mouth is always a positive thing about community and family and spirit. And I think that comes across in this album. This album, though, is a darker album. There is some interesting moments of pathos and things like that in this album, which you wouldn't always expect. You didn't get it from Firepower. As I said, Firepower was like the old days. It was like going back to Screaming for Vengeance again. It was like a very fast, sped up version of British Steel. But here, because it is produced by Most of it's produced by Andy Sneap, and some of it's produced by Tom Allum of Def Leppard and Black Sabbath fame, and Ozzy Osbourne fame. It is really, because Andy Sneap, not only is he one of the best guitarists on the circuit, but he's also one of the best producers. He's one of those people that is so insanely talented musically. It runs through his blood almost like Richie Faulkner. It's in his blood. And what he produces is stellar. Like, it always is stellar. Like, when his work with, of course, with Sabbath, I've told you that before, it's where he started, you know, British thrash legends, and then, you know, on to other projects, but mainly this Priest, you know, filling in for Glenn, and then permanently now replacing Glenn. It's a very big shoes to fill, but when you listen to the album, you really hear the fanboy in both, in all of the musicians. I mean, not in Heal the bass player, or even Scott on drums, but you certainly do with Faulkner and with Sneap. You know, you certainly do. One second. I don't know what I've done here. I will just pause that. One second, guys. Sorry about that. New laptop error issues again. Getting used to these. I moved all the files across from one computer to the other, and it sometimes goes looking for a file when it shouldn't do. Anyway, back to where I was going. So, yeah, the fanboy, you can really feel it and hear it in them. And even when if you see them live, you have the pleasure to see them live, and I highly urge you to do so. When they're on the stage, even if it's just when it's Sneap and Hill and Faulkner, before even Halford comes out, they are just grinning from ear to ear. They are like, I cannot believe I'm on stage with Judas Priest. All right, it's like every dream come true. Can you imagine? Just imagine the fun. I mean, not only the pressure, because of course Priest fans are going to be extremely picky. And they do, like with a lot of things, they seem to have taken Sneap and Faulkner to their hearts, and I don't see why they wouldn't, because they're never going to be KK Downing and Glenn Tipton, but they are certainly worthy axemen to fill that space, and they fill it well. They really feel that the solos are rich, the rhythms are heavy, they've always got a smile on their face, they're moving around, they're taking it lightly and with fun, but also with a very serious note, right? Now, okay. Andy Sneap did produce the 2018 album, yes he did. And as I said, I think that was his first with their band. I'm double checking to that. If it is, you can see why he sort of, it was more traditional in that album, because he was probably just sort of feeling his way, and then this one here is much more experimental, but without scaring those fans that, as I said before, aren't looking for experimental music. Although I highly urge you to listen to Nostradamus all the way through and not be scared of it. You do have to give it time, and you do need to sit down with it, and you do need to give it respect, and you have to understand that where the band was coming from at the time. And just, you know, don't push it aside like a lot of these I did for years with Maiden's you know, albums without Bruce. I was like very snobby about it, and then doing this podcast I went back and listened to them and realized I'd been a little bit of a silly fool, because they're actually good albums and they've got some good tracks on, and Blaze Bailey's got a good voice and he's doing his bloody best. And I think it's the same with the Priest albums. Even with Ripper Owens on, you know, they still make good albums. It's difficult to replace Rob for his size of personality and his range of vocals. Now, this album was born sort of at the time of COVID. They had it written and ready to go and were writing it, but COVID came along, stopped everything, and then they had a 50th anniversary tour come along, so they had to sort of also push it aside. It was recorded across several continents. I believe that Scott lives, the drummer, lives in Nashville. Richie Faulkner lives in Nashville. And so they recorded their parts in there. And Rob Halford and lives in Arizona, but he wrote with Andy Sneap together there in Arizona. Ian Hill wrote most of his bass parts when they were on tour during the 50th anniversary, because he's based in Europe. You can sort of, it doesn't come across that way in the recording. I've always been quite amazed. I thought for a long time that this COVID thing, when it pulled people apart and people recording different continents and using computers, that it would sort of ruin the connectivity of the sound, but it doesn't seem to have done. I think it just shows that we now can do more without having to be in the same room, and you still get the same passionate experience and the same connective experience as playing together in the same room. I'm quite impressed by it, to be honest with you. I don't know. I think this is before I go on to the album and review it track for track, I think this is a golden era Priest album. I think this will sit in that pantheon with definitely latter era classics like Firepower, Painkiller. It does, I mean, Rob does use his usual vocal tropes on this album, which he does very, very well. So if you know Rob, you'll know that he has that. If you remember Painkiller, where he does he breaks the word up, you know, he goes pain, pain, killer, killer, and he goes up octaves as he does. It's the same as this. He uses that mechanism to go up the octave in the song, and you always know where it's going to crescendo in an extremely high pitch note that's going to wail over the solos or under the solos or whatever. And it's also extremely underpinned by a brilliant rhythm section. Okay, that they've been playing together now for a long time, 20 years I believe plus, and you know, I know that people sometimes laugh at Mr. Hill on bass, where he stands there and his only movement is sort of up and down of the neck. He just rocks from side to side. But it does it for him. It does it for him. Geezer Butler doesn't move around a lot. No one says anything about that. We can't all be Steve Harris, right? But he's a thunderous bass player. He's so underrated because he doesn't sit on the root note one octave below. He does a Geezer and a Steve, and he sort of blends and moves and sort of sways and bobs with the rhythm of the band. He doesn't just sit there and, you know, dump 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 dump. No, he's not one of those bass players. He's got textures and he's got rhythms. He's got moments that he sort of puts in there that would only be Mr. Hill. Now, we're going to say goodbye to this side, and we're going to come back the other side with a track for track. Just chat about each of the tracks, and we'll see how we go from there, okay? Hope you enjoy listening to some ads. I'm going to now get a cold drink, and I'll talk to you later on. Bye for now.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Welcome back, guys, to part two of the show, Heavy Metal Tones, with me, your podcast host, Tony Evans. I hope you've refreshed yourself for a few minutes there, or if you're like me, you've just skipped the ads. Anyway, this is the track-for-track breakdown of Judas Priest's Invincible Shield, the latest album, the 19th album, the first one since 2018. It's a great way to spend your birthday, having a good listen to this album. I'm not going to go all the way through every single track to give you a lyrical breakdown, as I did last week with Bruce Dickinson. I'm just going to talk about the overall individual tracks and sort of musically. There is some stories behind them. The first one we're going to open with is Panic Attack, the first single. And this is that one that sounds like it's off of, vocally, it's off of straight out of Painkiller. It's got that attack sound that Priest sort of gives you 1-2 to the solar plexus, you know, bang, bang, and over you go. Now, musically, it's what you get with Priest. Nothing different here, guys. Nothing to be seen differently. This is, musically, this is the most sort of traditional track on the album. And it's about, apparently, about the internet. So Rob has said that it's about the what the internet is now, what it promised, that now it sort of has avenues of darkness and venom and evil and issues, whereas it was meant to be a tool for mankind and to better our knowledge. But unfortunately, it's been hijacked, and that's what he says this song is about. And it is, you know, when you hear the lyric, it does talk about that sort of thing. But it does come across that sort of he tells a dark story with such a light note. Rob? You know, everyone's heard the single. If you haven't heard this single now, I don't know where you've been living, because it's been on every media outlet you can shake a stick at since it was released. If you're into the scene, then you would, I'm sure, have heard it. Okay. And then we have Invincible Shield, which is it's about the heavy metal family. Okay. Rob says it's about... this is the second single. It's about the shield that heavy metal fans use to protect themselves and their fans and the bands, and sort of like a little army, little family. The music is their protective shield. And I think, you know, he's always been in about the metal family and metal maniacs, and, you know, he's always going on about that using his lovely sort of Brummish accent. It isn't the second single, but the second album, a song, by the way. That's the second single. The second song is actually The Serpent and the King. So there is actually a little bit of religious connotations on this album, because in later life, Rob has become quite religious. He's also producing it written by friends of his and writers he's written with, when they wrote Screaming for Vengeance and stuff. And they're again quite in Christian rock bands and so on. So, not that that should put you off. It's not, if you die hard black metal and won't go anywhere near anything Christian, that's not what I'm saying. I said this is universal, it's just got a positive message to it. All right, same with Devil in Disguise and Gates of Hell, Crown of Thorns. They're all very traditional imagery in their music, like in the lyrics. But the musical breakdowns in them are all different. There's some marvelously inventive guitar pieces, particularly in Gates of Hell and in Devil in Disguise, both Sneap and Richie Faulkner duel each other quite beautifully on those tracks, and Ian Hill and Scott on drums absolutely, you know, underpin it with quite a veracity, quite a beautiful deepness to it. Now, I did write a note here. Where have I written? I've written a note. Sorry, one second. I'm gonna. Okay. Yes. All right. No. Sorry. Excuse me. I'm trying to read my handwriting. And then you get as God is my witness. Again, another positive message in this lyric. You might read it either way. You might read it negatively. I've heard people say this is an album of portent and doom. I don't read it that way. He certainly could be read as an album of Nostradamic kind of portent. Just because it's talking about the internet doesn't mean that the whole album is full of doom. I mean, the person I think that made that assumption somewhere in a review I read was probably only heard the first single. But though, you know, it's quite an interesting opening salvo. It's really thumping, moving, and it has some beautiful moments where it comes into, on all of these tracks, where it comes down an octave and down a moment and eases in and has that sort of almost acoustic feel vibe, and then back up to the crescendo again. It's a blistering album, right? And then we come to Escape from Reality. Now, this is one of my picks. I've written on this, one of my picks says here, this has got Tipton on. I think Glenn Tipton wrote this song, if I am right. Yes, and this one is quite a song that will make you think, because he's struggling with his mental disease, which is breaking his body down. I think he's got Parkinson's, if I remember rightly. And how he can write this song, and how he can write the solos on this song, it's about the struggle he has, about escaping his reality, that his life is no longer what it used to be. And you know, he lived to play guitar. Now, you know, it probably took him such a long time to play these parts, and he can't do it like he used to. And he's got to escape his reality. It's got a swagger and a funk to it. It makes my hair raise my arms when I hear this song. I think this is pick of the songs on the album for me. Not because it's Glenn wrote it and Glenn's soloing on it, but because it's just a very poignant track. And I think that sort of vibe is it's just great. It has a real, I've put here also, it's got a real Black Sabbath vibe, real sort of a real sort of doominess, a real kind of, but some of that later Iommi sound, you know, that sort of Volume 4 and Sabbath Bloody Sabbath Iommi sound is what I feel in this, is what it feels to me. Yeah, it's but when both Tom and because Tom, I think Tom produced Escape from Reality, which is, you know, he can feel that he has his fingerprints all over it, because it's very much the sound that he did with Sabbath. It has that kind of a typical Tom sound. If you know what Alum's music albums that Tom's worked on, you really can pick them, and it sort of does come across that sort of way, very almost like Never Say Die, in fact, which I think Tom did produce. It does, the whole album gets your head moving, your body moving. It's a real party metal album. I think if anyone was going to say, what kind of genre would you call Priest? I would call it traditional heavy metal, but I would call it party metal as well, because it's not so heavy that people who don't like heavy metal can't listen to it. And it's not so light that people who say they like really heavy metal will think it's too poppy. It's not commercial, and it's not forced, and it's not pretense either. It's like John Lydon would say, there's no pretending here. What they do is what they mean, and you get that with this this particular album. I'm just going to read my notes here. It's got a real heavy, epic dynamism, a spirit to it. It's like, you know, when you were kids and you listened to, if you were like me, listen to Priest when you were very young, when I was about, I was about 8, I think, when I first came across British Steel. My brother bought it on Carnaby Street. He bought a British Steel t-shirt on Carnaby Street, and then he had the album at home, and it sort of was at that time one of the sort of most fun and heaviest things I've ever heard in my life. And it this album does bring that sort of youthfulness, makes me feel go back to that time again, you know. Now, why don't we move on? I'm going to look at my tracks. Okay, I've also, the arrangement on this album is so beautifully placed. You know, it doesn't sound like it's, you know, the mix is brilliant. There's, in all the tracks, the mix is really fluent and level, and everything is, you can hear everything. Sometimes with modern metal, particularly with some of this really heavy, extreme stuff, you can't hear the augmentation of the music. You can't hear the, is that not augmentation, what's the word, you can't hear the placement of the instruments, that's what I'm trying to say. So you can't hear the drums do their bit, it's always drowned out, the vocal is tuned up to 11, the guitar so loud that you know the beauty of the melody that lies within the music is lost, and the bass just disappears behind a wall of fuzz. The great bass players like Geezer Butler, like Steve Harris, like Ian Hill, they don't need a lot of effects. I think the most that they'll use, if they do, is wah. And I think that, I don't think you'll find Steve uses wah, and I don't think Ian uses wah. It might only be Geezer. It doesn't need it, because the intonation that they get on their strings, the type of strings, I think they use, all three of them use round wounds, which are sort of heavier, because I've had a set of Geezer signature black round wounds on a bass years ago, and I burnt my fingers because they had this sort of graphite coating, but they were real fun and bouncy to play, really thick sound, and that's what you get from this album. So where was I going? Okay, I'm trying to find the track listing. Oh yeah, and then your Son of Thunder and Giants in the Sky. Now, Giants in the Sky, we'll go to that one first, because it's the one that I sort of think of as a note here. What did I say about Giants in the Sky? It's real rock and roll. It's dirty, thrilling rock and roll with an epic feel to it. As a sort of, the Priest haven't done that very often. They haven't gone the traditional old 80s metal route where they were all about dragons and knights and monsters. And also, they didn't also do a lot about overtly over-sexual. I mean, yes, they did, of course. I mean, you can't have a song like Eat Me Alive. You can read into that what you want, my friends. But it's not typical, atypical 80s metal where there's lots of, schoolboy innuendo. And same with this, they don't do the schoolboy fantasy book thing. But Giants in the Sky, again, I think it's in my interpretation, it's about satellites encircling the Earth and nations watching nation. And the war for space is where it's going to be. If there is a war of annihilation, it's going to be in space. And that's where I think that he's talking about that in this song. Now, Son of Thunder, again, it's just a rollicking rock and roll song with a brilliant bass line on it. I think, like most bands, the bass player and the drummer often, unless they do solos or they're really well known, like someone like, I don't know, Cozy Powell or John Bonham or, you know, Nico McBrain or someone like that with a big, big personality, they're not going to be front and center to most people watching it. Most people watching a band will focus on the guitarist and the singer. Sometimes, if you're like me, you look at the bass player, and in fact, you look at all of them because I'm a music nerd, but you live, you tend to sort of sometimes forget bass players there, which is really interesting because you take him away, song becomes really thin, the music becomes really directionless. So Ian does such a good job in that, that he's sort of, for 50 years, has never repeated himself, has always sounded fresh, has always kept at it, you know, never changing and never wavering, so much like Rob Halford, you know, and sadly, like before Glenn got sick and before KK retired, although now you do get KK's Priest going around, not sure personally, but that's the end of the traditional album, And then we move, if you've got the special edition album, you get you get Fight for Life, Vicious Circle, and The Lodger. Okay, now this is where we get a couple of Tipton tracks here on this album. Sorry, I did mean to say that Sons of Thunder has a Glenn Tipton song. And that's exactly why it is what it is. It's powerful and heavy, but also has a very glorious, and I've written here again, it oozes, and it's really heartwarming to know that the man behind the sound of modern metal, particularly 80s metal, one of them, Tipton and KK Downing, is there still, you know, attacking it with his bluesy swagger that he always did, right? And then we move, as I said, to the bonus tracks. Now, you know, whether you get the classic album or you download it, you're going to want to listen to these, because Fight for Life, Vicious Circle, and The Lodger. The weakest track on the album is The Lodger. I'm going to say that out right now. That's written separately with a secondary writer. Okay. It's a little bit too religious for me, a little bit too, I don't know. It's a track that I think they could have left off between you and me, listeners. It was written by Bob Halligan Jr., who also performed with a Celtic rock band and a Christian rock band. He's worked with them with Scream of Vengeance and Defenders of the Faith. I don't know where this song goes. I'm not sure what it's about. I don't know why it's there. Look, love it, I'm sure you will. There's someone out there that will say this is the best track on the album, possibly. I don't know. I can't say this album is all killer, no filler, because it is. With the original album, ignoring these three bonus tracks, is all killer, no filler. Adding on these bonus tracks and the deluxe version, you get All Killer One filler with Lodger. Now, again, shoot me down if you want. That's your opinion. You might go, no, Tony, I don't agree. I think this is an absolute cracker of a track. But I don't know. It just feels tacked on, where you could easily push into the set list. You could easily push into there. Fight for Life and Vicious Circle, definitely, because they're very Priesty. In fact, anything, they actually remind me of some of Halford's solo stuff, which is probably where it comes from. He probably had it as solo songs and then hadn't got an album to put it on sitting around. I don't know, because musically it is what it is. It matches the album's pace, tenacity, texture, balance, augmentation, you know, augmentation, that's the wrong word. I don't know why I keep saying augmentation. Arrangement. I'm trying to say arrangement. Oh, where's augmentation coming from? Oh, I don't know. Anyway, arrangement. It has the feel of a Sneap classics. It's got his hands all over it. Same with Alum. It's got his hands all over it. But I like the way this album uses two producers and doesn't skip a beat. You can hear, if you're very astute, a Tom Alum sound. As I said, it's got that real kind of Americana sound that Tom seems to do so well. It has that latter day Priest sound when they were recording a lot in the States when they were really stoned. It has that sort of sound to it. I think he uses a lot of it's very well, it's got quite a bit of gain in his tracks, whereas I feel that Sneap's far more deeper sounding production, a little bit more modern sounding, whereas Tom's is a little bit old school. Is that the right? I don't know if that's the right thing to say. Anyway, it's an absolute belter of an album. I'm going to give it 10 Millsies out of 10. This almost blows the Millsy meter out of the Mercury out the top and all over the floor. It does in its original format. It doesn't in the deluxe print. Because I don't see how I can say it is 11 out of 11 or goes to 11 with the Lodger on the end. But truthfully honest, I said right back at the beginning of the show, any Priest is good Priest. All Priest is good Priest. Having an, that's like Maiden, like you can't complain about a Maiden album. All Maiden or any Maiden is a good day. Any new Priest album is a good day. So, you know, we have to hold on to this while we can. I mean, how many years more can a band of 50 years really pull it together? I mean, I honestly was skeptical when KK left and when Glenn got sick, and I was like, well, I don't know where this is going to go. But honestly, these two guys have just lit up. I think, like Halford said, when they both started playing again, it gave him a completely new sense of life and joy. It sort of sparked him again. And I think that's the thing, isn't it? He draws on the youthfulness. I mean, there's no way that, I mean, Sneap and Falcone are not youthful by any means, but they're not octogenarians either. They're not pensioners either. Love you, dear Rob. But the heaviest pensioner on the planet. You know what I mean? The heaviest rocking pensioner on the planet. You and your love for cats, man. You just make us smile all the time. All the time. So, where does it sit? Where does it sit in the new rankings? I'm not going to say and be that person and say it's, you know, in my top five. Because I haven't lived with it long enough yet. And to push out something that's been there since I was a teenager is extremely hard to do. And I absolutely will not do it just to blow smoke up their asses. I won't do it. I think that it certainly ranks one of their better later albums. It's not as audacious and as criminally insane as Nostradamus. It isn't as speed mad as Painkiller or Firepower, but it's a mixture of all three. I think it has the Halford solo career intertwined. It's got lessons learned on the road from things like Nostradamus and Painkiller. How to write one of the greatest heavy metal songs of all time, and you know, in Painkiller and repeat it without being a parody of yourself is really hard to do. And that's a genius in this particular band, is that they don't repeat, they don't parody, they don't pander, and they don't disrespect their fans. They just don't. They don't do a Metallica, they don't do a Megadeth or any of those bands. And I genuinely feel, listeners, the reason that bands like Maiden and Priest and Sabbath, have the longevity that they do is because they weren't born of heavy metal, okay? They weren't. They were originators. They had a birth forged in blues, pub rock, pop, jazz, all these different things that they were that bore them to the direction that they are. You know, I'm reading Ozzy's biography at the moment. You know, he's talking about his love of the Beatles, and Priest. Halford has a huge love of Motown, and the thing is, because that is truly a musical diversity. When you these newer bands, this is why I feel a bit sad, is that I think that they jump in, young kids, and they listen to heavy metal and they go, I'm 12 years old, this is my musical direction. But instead of going back and delving into where the band's past comes, i.e. Priest and Maiden and Sabbath and so on, Deep Purple, and they go, right, okay, well, it's blues. Oh, I'll have to listen to blues, see if I like that, and see what's going on. Oh, yeah, okay, there's Gary Moore. Oh, I'll go from Gary Moore. Oh, look, there's Stevie Ray Vaughan. Oh, okay, Stevie Ray Vaughan. Oh, there's Steve Vai. And you go off on these different tangents, and you grow your musical sense. But these young bands, where they come in, and it's like so one-dimensional. It's why Metallica, to some extent, and I'm sorry for big Metallica fans listening to the show, might switch off right now, but everyone has their opinion, and if you haven't switched off, take a look. This is, again, just my opinion. They struggled to find different direction because musically they did not. I mean, they tried it with things like Lulu and all that stuff, but that was them desperately trying to find something that they probably didn't really exist in their souls, right? And so, you know, the music form, like heavy metal, and let's be brutally honest, it can run its course, and bands can become parodies, spinal taps of themselves, if you wish. But not Priest. Not once in 19 albums, not once have they become a parody of themselves. Not once have they tried to change their sound. Not once. They haven't even sounded like the decade they're in. You know, sometimes with some bands, a good example is Jethro Tull's A album. It's very electronic because it's the early 80s. And it's a stinker of an album. I can't listen to that album. And it's because they're not being true to themselves. They're just, oh, I've got this new toy, and we're trying to keep in with the crowd. I was watching on TikTok Slade, an 80s Slade single, and I thought, my God, you're just trying to be almost. I thought they were trying to be Def Leppard. Weirdly, it didn't really feel or look like Slade to me. That might just be an old man's visions of what he thinks a band should look like, but between you and me, it just didn't cut it because they were trying to be someone else. It's when bands like Priest, and I said, try to maintain their individuality and their direction. They can make albums like Invincible Shield and Firepower and Painkiller and Screaming for Vengeance and, you know, all that stuff. They can do it, and they can do it with change of personnel and not even skip a beat and change direction. They just carry on where they're going because they're smart. And when they hired those two guitarists, they were so smart. They picked up players that had the same nuances, the same movements, almost the same concept of musical notation and you know, arrangement as Downing and Tipton. So, you know, they step inside their footsteps and they just carry on. It's like they took it in their strides, almost like didn't even stop. And this album says to me they'll never stop, and I really hope they don't. I mean, obviously there's going to become a day. There'll always be a day. We don't want them to be, you know, the Rolling Stones, do we? There is a point when they just need to maybe hang their boots up. But right now, this, enjoy them while they're here. And this album is, in its original length, 10 out of 10, 11 out of 11, all killer, no thriller. No filler, no killer. No, all killer, no filler. But it is the digital, you know, extended version. Yeah, one song. But we'll give it that. Can't all be Painkiller, can it? Can't all be... they can't all be Escape from Reality or Sons of Thunder. It can't. You're going to have its ups and downs, and that's its down. Anyway, it's just a shame it ends on that one for the digital deluxe version. Ending on... Where is it? Sorry. You know, ending on Giants in the Sky is the way to do it. But anyway, or even ending on Vicious Circle, to be honest, would be a brilliant way of doing it. But on that note, I'm ending now. Chat to you later. Talk to you soon. Bye for now.